Doctors in Metro Detroit have had a crash course in thousands of COVID cases these last couple of months. Now, with hospitalizations plateauing, they've gained some hard-won insight into fighting the virus. Michigan Radio's Kate Wells is here to tell us that no two health systems are treating these patients exactly the same way. Kate, hi.
Hi.
So you talked with lead doctors and pharmacists in four of the major health systems that were hit really hard by the surge: Michigan Medicine, Henry Ford, Beaumont, and Detroit Medical Center. What have they learned about this virus that they didn't know even a couple of weeks ago?
Well, they've definitely made a lot of progress. But one thing that they all say is that COVID is really kind of like this shapeshifter, that every time they think they have their arms wrapped around it, it changes, evolves in some way. One of the doctors that I talked to is at Detroit Medical Center. Her name is Dr. Tina Chopra, and she kind of put it like this.
It's a very deceptive virus. To keep up with it, it is a challenge. It is manifesting differently by age, by race, by sex.
And one of the things that she means when she says that it's kind of deceptive and manifesting differently is that with a lot of their younger patients right now, and this is not just the DMC, this is across the board, they're seeing people develop pulmonary embolisms, or essentially dangerous blood clots that are often in the lungs. And they can't figure out necessarily why at this point so many COVID patients are having these blood clot issues, but it could be something that helps explain why we've seen otherwise healthy younger people die, as it may be linked up with those clots. Then on the other hand, you've got, you know, your older patients who are coming in from nursing homes. And Dr. Chopra says that often, like when you're doing an exam of them, it doesn't even look like they have COVID at all. They don't have your typical symptoms. They don't have a fever or a cough. But so many of them, as we know, end up testing positive for COVID.
We are beginning to test every patient coming from a nursing home, for example, whether they have symptoms or not, because we want to assume they haven't.
Between that and the fact that the virus sometimes boomerangs with certain patients, it's easy to see how they have their hands full. Kate, the virus is so new, even once you can spot it and figure out how it's affecting a patient, there's still the issue of treating it. What's working that we know of?
Well, there are a few things that doctors are really optimistic about right now, and some of them also kind of defy logic, just like the virus. One doctor that I talked to at Michigan Medicine, Dr. Vineet Chopra, he has been most surprised by this treatment called high-flow oxygen therapy. It's essentially when they take a giant thick tube, they hook it up to your nose, and it's essentially blowing a lot of warm, hot, humid oxygen into your lungs and your system without you having to go on a ventilator. And he's tried this sometimes where he's like, look, I'm pretty sure that eventually this patient is going to need to go to on a ventilator, but, you know, what the heck, let's try it. And he's told me that he can't believe it, that sometimes these patients do really well on these high-flow oxygen therapies, even though their numbers look like they should be crashing.
And it's surprising to me how I've seen, you know, younger patients who would have met criteria for being on a ventilator, getting this sort of high flow oxygen therapy, literally sit there with their devices, texting their loved ones with the numbers looking terrible, but they're feeling okay.
One thing that he mentioned is that these people have oxygen numbers that in the past, he said in the old ways, you would have thought are not compatible with life, but that with COVID, for some reason, this seems to be working. And they don't really necessarily know why it does for some patients, and for others, it doesn't.
That's great that they're able to avoid putting some patients on a ventilator. But as we know, a number of patients do need that treatment.
Yeah.
And we know that so many patients have gone on to ventilators. What's happening with them now? I mean, do they recover?
Well, so definitely some of them do. And if you have a loved one for whom this has happened, it's possible that you may be dealing with what a lot of doctors are seeing right now, which is some subset of patients go on these vents for days, like 25, 30 days, and they just don't seem to improve. It's like they get stuck on these ventilators. One doctor that I talked to, they nicknamed these patients internally the Slovid patients. And they're trying anything they can at this point. Because ventilators, you know, are risky, they're trying to figure out ways to get these patients oxygen support so that they don't have to be on the ventilator. One way that they're doing that are performing these surgical procedures, tracheostomies, which is essentially they make an incision and they insert a tube into a a patient's windpipe to get them off the vent but still give them oxygen support. Dr. Steve Kalkanis is another doctor that I talked to. He's at Henry Ford. And he says this is an unusual option, but it's one thing they're trying for long-term support.
That's not something we thought would have been appropriate or possible at the beginning of this crisis. But because they're stable from, you know, other medical standpoints, it's really just their lungs, we have started to do trachs on these patients.
Kate, are we seeing health systems actually starting to take contradictory directions here? We've talked about a number of different therapies. Is there anything developing where one hospital says, here's the right thing to do, and another says, no, that's wrong?
Yeah, and I think that's often because, you know, everybody is kind of moving around in the dark here, right? We don't have enough large clinical studies to say this treatment is the best or this is the proven cure or anything like that, obviously. But one place that it almost feels like when you talk to these doctors, they're talking about two completely different things, or they're just seeing completely different things, is around hydroxychloroquine. This is the one that got a lot of news. You know, President Trump talked about it a lot, but it's also been really controversial. The FDA put out a warning about saying it's got some heart risks associated. Still, though, Henry Ford Health System is doing a big 3,000-person clinical trial just to see if it's even preventative. Detroit Medical Center says they're using it and they are not seeing any harm. They think it's helping their patients. But then, you know, you talk to somebody at Michigan Medicine, like Dr. Vineet Chopra again, and he says, no, it was hurting his patients. These patients who were having trouble breathing were getting nauseous. They were vomiting.
And I remember kind of getting a lot of folks very angry about what do you have to lose? This is, you know, it's sort of a no-brainer. Just give it to people. And it wasn't a no-brainer because the harms were real. We saw liver toxicities. We saw the electrical toxicities to the heart.
Kate, it's kind of hard to believe that it really only has been a matter of weeks since hospitals started to treat surge cases. What would you say about just sort of the where doctors' heads are right now and how they're feeling about the progress that has been made?
So I think they are three things right now, and this is obviously speaking broadly. I think they are concerned, frustrated, but also optimistic on some level. I think they are concerned, especially about some of the populations that we talked about, like the nursing home patients. You know, you do a tracheostomy on a nursing home patient, then what? Do you just send them back to a long-term care facility? What if they're contagious? You know, there's a lot of these like longer-term care issues that we're starting to see pop up that, you know, we just didn't know about before this. I think they're frustrated, especially by these patients that get stuck on ventilators. You know, doctors are people too. They want patients to improve. They want to feel like they're helpful. And that is just really stumping them. And it's hard to go to families and say, you know, not only can you not come visit your loved one, but they've been on this ventilator for 25, 30 days, and we don't know what to do. And then I am seeing optimism from them about different treatments, especially as we're starting to understand this virus a little bit better. You know, whether it's treatments that help the immune system or whether it's treatments where they take blood plasma from a patient who's recovered and give it to patients who are still sick. You know, doctors are seeing some signs of hope here.
Are there any formal networks for Michigan's hospitals to share information or practices, or is this just people relying on their own networks and their own experience?
It's a mix of both, right? There are definitely places like, you know, the Michigan Health and Hospital Association, and the state has definitely been trying to do a lot more coordinating between these health systems that have all been hard hit. But a lot of it, too, is, you know, because any information that comes in, all these doctors want to have it. So they're all, you know, reading and sharing and swapping between them every single small study that comes out from, you know, Ireland or whatever country and reading it and trying to see if it fits what they're seeing or if it could give them some help. But again, without these large clinical trials, without more time to figure out what works and what doesn't, everybody's just taking their best shot. They're doing what they think will give you the best chance of surviving if you're a patient. And it may look completely differently depending on where you're treated.
Michigan Radio's Kate Wells. You can read her write-up on what she found at Michigan's hospitals and their treatment of COVID-19 on our website. That's michiganradio.org. Kate, thank you so much.
Thank you, April.